We have no idea what they have experienced inside.
She is talking about a trial in China for people who had tried to flee Hong Kong. It's Thursday, December 31st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also coming your way, China and the EU agree on a trade arrangement that could anger the United States. The new year in North Korea could pose challenges to the Biden administration. China nixes a property deal by the U.S. in Hong Kong. And Singapore begins COVID vaccinations. All of that and more on today's VOA Asia. Two underage fugitives who were among the group of 12 detained in China after fleeing Hong Kong by boat were handed over to Hong Kong police on Wednesday. The group had all faced charges in Hong Kong over anti-government protest in the Chinese-ruled city, and they've been held virtually incommunicado in a mainland prison since their boat was intercepted on August 23rd after leaving Hong Kong allegedly en route to the Democratic Island of Taiwan. Chow Hung Tung, vice chairwoman of the Hong Kong Alliance in Support of Patriotic Democratic Movements of China, told a gathering of reporters,
"The whole trial was conducted in secret without the participation of the family. The family's opponent lawyers never have any access to the trial. They can never communicate directly with the trial, no phone call, and all the letters were intercepted. We have no idea what they have experienced inside."
The two minors who were among the 11 males and one female had pleaded guilty to illegal border crossing and would not be charged, said the prosecutor. A Chinese court sentenced the other 10 Hong Kong activists to between 7 months and 3 years in jail for illegally crossing the border. After the verdicts were announced, Hong Kong police said that the two youngest of the group, now aged 17 and 18, had been handed over and would appear in court in the financial hub after completing quarantine for coronavirus. As press freedom took a hit during 2020, China led the way as far as hitting is concerned. Jessica Dreet reports.
Blocking information on the coronavirus pandemic, jailing bloggers, imposing restrictions on foreign journalists, and, in Hong Kong, introducing a national security law resulting in high-profile arrests. China is at the forefront of government repression of media in 2020. Scott Griffin is with the International Press Institute.
The pandemic has overshadowed what I think is the most disturbing trend or development this year, which has actually been the situation in Hong Kong, because I think it's an example of the sort of larger struggle between, liberal societies in which press freedom is respected as a basic value and a more authoritarian model of society in which the press is understood as a vessel of government messaging.
Beijing's actions to delay visas and restrict permits for local and foreign journalists stifled international coverage. Foreign correspondent Bill Birtles was forced to leave Beijing at short notice after police sought to question him and another Australian journalist. In December, a slew of arrests included Jimmy Lai, publisher of Hong Kong's Apple Daily, and Chinese nationals who worked for Bloomberg and the New York Times. Again, Scott Griffin.
The extension of Chinese law, in particular through the national security law in Hong Kong, has led to a major press freedom crackdown already. And we are deeply concerned about this because I think that this is one of the clearest examples, in recent times in which a society that enjoyed press freedom for so many years is seeing that freedom removed, before its eyes and actually before the world's eyes.
China says it is responding to U.S. moves to restrict visas for journalists from Chinese state media. Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin.
The U.S., on the one hand, is boasting of freedom of journalism. On the other hand, is hindering and interfering with Chinese journalists reporting in the U.S., which hence exposes its hypocrisy of freedom of journalism.
Washington labels Chinese-run outlets as foreign missions and has limited visas in response to Beijing's treatment of foreign journalists. China has a record of detaining those who criticize authorities or report on abuses of minorities. According to Press Freedom Watchdog, the Committee to Protect Journalists, it was the leading jailer of journalists in 2020, putting 47 behind bars. Courtney Raj is the committee's advocacy director.
This year, what we saw is that the reporting on COVID-19 and the pandemic, both the existence of the pandemic, but also then the governmental responses to the pandemic, landed journalists in China in jail. It also led to the expulsion of many foreign journalists from China.
In 2020, when access to reliable, independent news seemed more important than ever, experts fear that China's crackdown on the press may signal a troubling trend. Jessica Dreet, VOA News.
We invite you to read more on our top stories by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Thailand imposed a ban Wednesday on large gatherings and events across the country. Philippine officials are under fire from critics and health authorities for unsanctioned COVID-19 vaccinations. Indonesia has banned the controversial and politically influential hardline group, the Islamic Defenders Front. India says talks with China have yet to make progress to end their border standoff. And the U.S. Attorney General says the United States stands ready to try a militant convict of murdering American journalist Daniel Pearl, whose release was ordered by a Pakistani court. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. This is VOA Asia. European Union top officials and Chinese President Xi Jinping have concluded a long-awaited business investment deal with the potential to annoy the new American administration. The EU hopes the agreement, known as CAI, will help correct the imbalance in market access and create new investment opportunities for European companies in China by ensuring they can compete on an equal footing when operating in the country. But it may cause tension with the administration of U.S. President-elect Joe Biden only weeks after the EU proposed a transatlantic dialogue to address the strategic challenge presented by China's growing international assertiveness. Happening now in Asia, Tokyo's governor says that city's coronavirus outbreak is severe and could explode in the coming days, just as Japan begins its New Year's holiday period, in which millions of people usually move around the country. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. The international community's efforts to compel North Korea to end its nuclear weapons program came to a halt in 2020 following the breakdown of U.S.-led negotiations and the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. Jason Strother reports from the South Korean capital, Seoul, that this year's setbacks will pose challenges for the incoming Joe Biden administration.
Efforts to engage North Korea over its nuclear weapons program never regained momentum after U.S. President Donald Trump and leader Kim Jong-un failed to reach an agreement during their second and final summit in February 2019. James Kim, a senior fellow at the Asan Institute for Policy Studies in Seoul, says the two nations are at a crossroads now. And it will be up to President-elect Joe Biden's administration to overcome these setbacks.
The only way that I think we're going to get any changes on the situation with North Korea is if U.S. decides to make some initial gestures to indicate to Pyongyang that they're ready for talks and negotiations. Otherwise, I just don't see how we're going to break out from the current impasse.
But Pyongyang has not sent any signals that it is ready to resume dialogue with Washington. The regime has not even acknowledged the change of leadership in the United States. Yang Mu-jin, a professor at Seoul's University of North Korean Studies, says this should not be a surprise because of the personal relationship that Kim and Trump developed. Yang says Kim Jong-un's silence is because Trump has called himself a friend, while Biden has called Kim a thug. Yang adds that North Korea's unprecedented lockdown during the COVID-19 pandemic presents another challenge for Washington and Seoul. Pyongyang has closed its borders and has refused Seoul's offer of humanitarian aid. In June, the North severed military hotlines with the South and destroyed a joint liaison office on its side of the inter-Korean border. Analysts say these setbacks make President Moon Jae-in's goal of signing a peace treaty with Pyongyang even more difficult. Hee Jin Koo, a research fellow at the Korean Peninsula Peace Forum in Seoul, says Moon had Trump's support for this effort. But she is not sure if Biden will make this a priority of his yet-to-be-announced North Korea policy.
With the incoming Biden administration, we'll probably see a return to a maximum pressure method.
Koo says that could mean that Biden will restart large-scale joint military exercises with South Korea, which Trump suspended. The Asan Institute's James Kim expects North Korea to offer some clarity on its stance toward the new U.S. administration in January during a ruling Workers' Party conference, which will coincide with Biden's inauguration on January 20th.
If we're going to see any movements from North Korea or any positioning or posturing changes, we're likely to see it within the month of February.
Kim says this will be a key period in determining the direction of U.S. and North Korea engagement. Jason Strother for VOA News, Seoul.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. A report by the Chinese Center for Disease Control says the number of coronavirus cases in the city where the outbreak was first detected may have been 10 times higher than official figures suggest. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. The sale of property owned by the U.S. consulate in Hong Kong failed to be completed as scheduled Wednesday after China unexpectedly stepped in and said its approval is needed, according to the buyer amid wide-ranging bilateral tensions. Hong Kong developer Hang Lung Properties said in a regulatory filing that it was unable to complete the purchase of the residential property, the latest twist in the $331.5 million deal in an upscale location in the financial hub. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin later told a daily news briefing in Beijing that the application requirement was in light of U.S. regulations on the management of registered properties of foreign missions in the United States and based on the principle of reciprocity. Only when they get the approval in writing from China, he said, can they proceed with the relevant procedures.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
Singapore began vaccinating healthcare workers with Pfizer BioNTech's COVID-19 vaccine Wednesday, kicking off one of Asia's first inoculation programs against a pandemic that has killed more than 1.7 million people worldwide. Sarah Lim, a 46-year-old nurse, was the first to get the injection.
I'm very thankful that I'm being vaccinated first. I hope to encourage others to get vaccinated to protect themselves against COVID. Yeah, being the first one, I feel very grateful.
43-year-old infectious diseases doctor Kalasvara Maramuthu was among the more than 30 staff at the National Center for Infectious Diseases who were vaccinated Wednesday.
It has been a long journey for us to reach here. So it has been tough for all of us, and with me, my colleagues, my neighbors, my friends, family and all. We all have lived a year that we have never expected. And vaccines have done their tricks in the past for other pandemic. Vaccines managed to bring pandemic down to their knees before. So I'm hopeful that this vaccine will do the same.
Singapore is the first country in Asia to approve the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine. It has also signed advanced purchase agreements and made early down payments on several other vaccine candidates, including those being developed by Moderna and Sinovac. It expects to have enough vaccine doses for all 5.7 million people by the third quarter of 2021. Australian authorities restricted movement and tightened curbs on gatherings in Sydney on Wednesday, hoping to avoid a coronavirus super spreader event during New Year's Eve celebrations. Libby Hogan reports.
Sydney's New Year's Eve celebrations, with dazzling firework displays bursting from the Sydney Harbour Bridge, will be more subdued this year. As new social distancing restrictions were announced on Wednesday in a bid to curb a new coronavirus cluster. Household gatherings were limited to just 5 people, and public gatherings have been capped at 30. Residential care facilities were also closed to visitors. New South Wales State Premier Gladys Berejiklian urged people to stay at home for New Year's celebrations to avoid a super-spreading event.
But we don't want New Year's Eve to be a situation where undetected cases, people who may be in the very early stages of the disease and not know they've got it, not know they're infectious, unintentionally give it to those closest to them.
18 new COVID-19 cases were reported on Wednesday, the biggest daily increase in a week. Half were linked to an outbreak in Sydney's Northern Beaches that's now grown to more than 100 people over the past week. Another cluster has also sprung up on the inner west side of Sydney, with 6 members of an extended family testing positive. Live viewings of this year's fireworks will be limited only for people with confirmed hospitality bookings and a permit. And as for the fireworks, the usual 9 p.m. display has been cancelled altogether, and their annual midnight display will be reduced to just 7 minutes.
That was correspondent Libby Hogan. We continue on VOA Asia. A runoff election in the United States state of Georgia has profound implications for Democrat Joe Biden. He'll be sworn in as U.S. President January 20th. At stake, 2 Senate seats that will decide the balance of power in the U.S. Congress. Mike O'Sullivan explains.
Early voting is underway in the Georgia runoff elections. 2 Senate seats are at stake after none of the candidates emerged with a majority in the November election. The runoff is January 5th. Outgoing President Donald Trump has campaigned on behalf of the Republican candidates.
The voters of Georgia will determine which party runs every committee, writes every piece of legislation, controls every single taxpayer dollar.
The 2 races are competitive. Incumbent Republican Senator Kelly Loeffler is essentially tied in her race against Democratic candidate Raphael Warnock. The contest between Democratic candidate John Ossoff and incumbent Republican Senator David Perdue is also tight, according to polls. While Democrats continue to hold a slim majority in the House of Representatives, Republicans control the Senate. The results on January 5th could end that control in the next session, says political analyst Sherry Bebich-Jeffy.
If the Democrats can pull off 2 victories, there will be 50 Republicans and 50 Democrats, a tie.
And Democrat Kamala Harris, who will be sworn in as U.S. Vice President, will preside over the Senate and can break any ties to move legislation forward. President-elect Joe Biden's victory in Georgia in November reversed the southern state's past pattern of voting Republican for president. Political scientist Raphael Sonnenschein.
That was a gigantic victory for Democrats. And to have forced the 2 runoffs, even though it's a long shot for Democrats to win both seats, it's a sign that Georgia's moving the way other parts of the South may be heading toward a new coalition.
A coalition of African Americans, whites, Asians, and Hispanics in the cities and suburbs. But the contest will be decided by who gets out the vote, says analyst Jeffy.
And the Democrats are moving strongly with regard to shoe leather campaigning, knocking on doors, even in a pandemic.
Republicans are leading in fundraising, and the final battle of a turbulent election hangs in the balance. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News.
It's been a bumper year for one second-hand kitchen seller in Japan. Tenboss Busters has bought double the amount of bold equipment after the global health crisis forced many restaurants to close. More from correspondent Flora Bradley Watson.
A warehouse piled high with kitchenware near Tokyo is a graveyard showing the toll the global health crisis took on the city's restaurants in 2020. Stacks of old sinks, fridges, pots, pans and chairs are all being refurbished and sold on by Tenboss Busters, a second-hand kitchen supplier. For them, it has been a bumper year. Takehito Toyama, the firm's sales director, says they've bought double the amount of goods.
In normal years, our warehouse doesn't get full or overflow with products. But because of the rising number of businesses or restaurants closing due to the coronavirus, our warehouse is overflowing.
Between February and mid-December this year, around 126 restaurants and bars have gone bust in Japan. One of those forced to close was the ramen noodle shop, Shirahachi, in Tokyo's business district. Yashiro Haga, its owner, got $165 selling his old kitchenware to Tenboss Busters.
I've been slowly cleaning the shop by myself every day. Now that my stuff is gone, the shop is bare and empty. It makes me sad.
Yashiro's premises is small, so social distancing and profits proved incompatible. Combine that with people encouraged to work from home, and his business of 15 years became unfeasible.
That was Flora Bradley Watson reporting. We continue now. A teacher from Virginia needed a private place to conduct her remote learning classes. Lesia Bacalet tells us how she turned a small space into an unusual office. Anna Rice provides the narration.
Nellie Williams, an elementary school teacher from Fairfax, Virginia, probably has the most unusual office in the whole school district.
My students now say, oh, I want one. And I said, I know it's very cool, but you cannot get upset with your parents if they cannot all build you a treehouse.
The idea to transform a miniature treehouse into a school office didn't come to Williams at the start of the pandemic. At first, like thousands of other school teachers, she tried to work from home. But she was surrounded by her own family and had a hard time concentrating.
There are four of us in the house, all doing jobs and distance learning. I have two daughters and my husband's home too. And we have a cat and two quite large dogs, and we just acquired a third, so it's a little distracting.
It was Williams's friend who drew her attention to the cozy treehouse where Nellie's daughters once played when they were smaller.
Our friend, Corey Hanna, looked up and said, you know, I think that should be your classroom for the year. And so we kind of thought about it and thought it sounded silly at first, but we said, okay, let's do it.
Inside the treehouse, the ceiling and walls needed to be properly insulated. The floor was fully changed as well. Basically, Williams made a full renovation, just on a smaller scale. She even made sure there was internet access.
Well, I am hardwired in. I plug in every morning. My husband and his friend Alex dug a 150-foot trench to bury the Ethernet cable in PVC piping and drilled a hole into our house. And this is literally coming from my home.
They worked on the renovation all summer and finished just in time for the new school year. Next, Williams hopes to repair the old zip line. That way, getting into the treehouse will be more fun. Williams often has company in her treehouse office. Her cat and dogs bob by. Her students love the innovative space, and since most of them chose distance learning in the spring semester as well, Williams will spend at least the next 6 months hard at work up in a tree. For Lisa Bocalietz in Fairfax, Virginia, Anna Rice, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. And you can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy the day ahead.